The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 20th of May, 2019. On the podcast today, Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rio Bowl Resources, RBD. Sachin provides an update on their operations, including California, on which they released news today. Plus, I also have Pierre Foury, Managing Director of GST, and Pierre discusses the letter of intent they've signed with Siam Motor Company to enter into a joint venture to build, own, and operate a data center. Plus, Malky, oil and gas sector specialist, talks about the following companies: Echo Energy, Rose Petroleum, Pantheon Resources, Jersey Oil and Gas, Rio Bowl Resources, Amerisa Resources, SDX Energy, Falcon Oil and Gas, Block Energy, and Egdon Resources. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, do me a big favour. It's free to use Vox Markets app. All right, absolutely free. We don't charge you a thing for it. If you derive any value from this, please thank us by giving us a decent rating and review at your app store, so Android or iTunes, whatever it is, and that would be much appreciated. By the way, those two lists, you can see top 10 versions of those lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a host of other content. Plenty of stuff there. You see Zach on a stock roundup today. He's looking at, what's he looking at? Emotion, Way Education, New Formix, Thomas Cook Group, who are in trouble, let's be honest. Fever Tree, there's a video there of Zach covering those. There's also interviews, there's also the morning roundup there, financial press review, plus five things you need to know today. That's from me. And lots of other stuff. Check it out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Sachin Oza, Co-Chief Executive at Rio Bowl Resources. That's RBD. Ticker there. Sachin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me, Justin.
Now, you've released an update on your Californian operations, and it's looking all good. As we speak, of course, it's dynamic. The market is liking this news. We'll get into what it's all about in a bit. But as always, Sachin, if someone's brand new to the podcast or not familiar with the company, could you give them a brief summary as to what Rio Bowl's all about, please?
Yeah, Rio Bowl Resources is an AIM-listed upstream oil and gas company where we focus on typically pre-cash flow assets. And the capital that we provide to those pre-cash flow assets gets them to the point of near-term drilling. They are low technical risk assets and ones that we can get into production or monetize pretty soon after we've had the successful drilling results. We started this strategy about 18 months ago, and I think we can demonstrably show, particularly as it relates to the California assets that we'll be talking about a little bit later, that strategy can create and does create substantial value for our shareholders because of the state of the market in upstream assets today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, take us through this Californian update. There's been some good news there. Explain what's happening here, Sachin.
Yeah, so it breaks down into two pieces. So maybe the first thing to do would be to talk a little bit about Monroe Swell specifically. Yeah. So as a reminder, Monroe Swell, we announced two discoveries, the Burnett 2A and Burnett 2B well in April. We had multiple pay zones of interest, and those are the reservoir intervals that are prognosed to be hydrocarbon bearing, and they span 60 meters and 90 meters respectively at the 2A and the 2B wells. But those pay zones are across a much larger gross interval of rock in the subsurface. And we tested some, but not all of the zones of interest. And the testing involves perforating and swabbing. When it was clear we were going to get commercial flow rates from the areas that we tested, we moved straight to the process of putting the wells onto production, even though we couldn't be exact about the amount of oil flow rate itself. Now, over the period of time that we did the testing, we noticed that the wells were cleaning up quite nicely and that the fluid rate was increasing from the start to the end of that test process. We anticipate getting these wells onto permanent production now in a couple of weeks' time and look forward to the cash flow that that's going to be generating from that production. And it's important to say part of the decision we were making here was all about accelerating that timeline of getting production and cash flow into the company. However, the production data will also allow us to evaluate the optimal time to go back and perforate those other zones that were prognosed to be hydrocarbon bearing, but we just haven't tested. But what it'll also allow us to do is to identify the best pathway forward, because we would anticipate being able to drill more wells on Munro Swell to start increasing production out of the field in general.
Yeah, so this is good news, isn't it? And I see it in your presentation there, just to put this into sort of, you know, a financial sort of aspect or, you know, sort of setting. You reckon your estimated NPV is around $235 million, is that correct?
Yeah.
This portfolio of assets here in California?
Yeah, so that breaks down into three underlying projects within California, or really four projects. But if we talk about the three with new wells, it was West Brentwood, it was Munro Swell, and then it was Grizzly Island. So we still anticipate drilling Grizzly Island later this year. But what we've done in terms of the de-risking of the NPV number is from West Brentwood and from Munro Swell. And, you know, as I said, we look forward to further activity on Munro Swell to prove up that number. But if we go to West Brentwood specifically, I think, you know, that NPV number is highly de-risked. And I can talk through that a little bit if you like.
Yeah, go for it. Yes. So
that the listeners can have a better understanding of that. So in the announcement that we made, we also discussed the gross production out of producing parts of our California assets, and that is on West Brentwood and Dowd. And that was a gross 7,484 barrels of oil equivalent from the period 20th of April to the 8th of May 2019. And the reason we chose that period is that that was the point at which VG4 was also put onto production, as well as VG3, which is producing today. But bear in mind that we had VG4 on production at a heavily constrained rate due to the associated gas that was being produced and the restrictions of being able to produce that gas in California. This will be alleviated, however, when we can tie VG4 into a nearby gas pipeline, also allowing us to generate revenue from that gas. But what we're waiting for really is from the regulator an encroachment permit due to the proximity of VG4 to a nearby road. But once we have that, we'll then be able to complete the final works. So for VG3 and VG4, what we have here is significant production, significant cash flow, and then the ability to get further cash flow generated from the gas, and then a lower higher rate and lower restricted rates associated with VG4. So we're really looking forward to showing what that asset can do. And, you know, as I said, very excited by the fact that we've pretty much proved the NPV value of that asset.
Yeah, and you say that it's, you know, it's self-funded growth from these assets, so it's very good. So, and I do like to, in your RNS, you said there's a sharp increase in near-term production with additional drilling to follow. That's good news, isn't it? So, and also, you've got things happening in Yorkshire. What's happening there?
Yeah, not much what we can say other than the fact that we are drilling. Everything going to plan. So we look forward to updating the market in the previous time frames that we mentioned. Just worthwhile highlighting, though, if there's anything significant that comes from the well prior to the end date that we had put on it, we will clearly inform the market if it's deemed to be price sensitive. So we, you know, as I say, look forward to updating the market on that accordingly. Also, I think, as you probably come on to, we would be anticipating drilling the Romania well for the end of June, and also Grizzly Island in California. So there's still further activity today on just what we've budgeted and told the market. But I think, as you were clearly alluding to, there's a lot of activity in the portfolio that we have not yet scheduled. And as we do that, we will inform the market of that accordingly.
Yeah, keeping busy. And overall, I think you've got to be very pleased with the progress you're making here, yeah?
I think 18 months ago when Stephen and I started the venture that is Rehoboth Resources in its current form, I don't think we could have ever anticipated, A, the level of success, and B, the level of activity, alongside being able to generate the cash flow that we are. So absolutely, we're, from an operational point, utterly delighted with what we've been able to achieve. I think there was a lot of pushback associated with how activity in this industry tends to be a lot slower than you would sometimes think. And from time to time, some of our wells do get pushed back, there's no doubt. But on top of that, what we've also been able to demonstrate is that when we do want to accelerate parts of our work program, we can do so, and we can show the results of that very quickly to our shareholders. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, as I say, pros and cons, but for us, far more pros than cons associated with opportunities in this space.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, one final thing to do. Sachin, if someone's listening, likes the sound of the progress you're making there, but are not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, Justin, again, as always, we've touched on so many of them already, but we'll just run through them each individually to highlight them. So the first point is we have carried out a lot of activity in our portfolio, and we can show the value generated, and certainly in the case of California, the cash flow being generated from that activity and success. But it doesn't stop there, because there's further opportunities within our portfolio drilling today, which would be significant for our company, such as the West Newton well, but in addition, Romania and Grizzly Island. And finally, on top of all of that, we have things in our portfolio that we have not scheduled yet for drilling, but we would anticipate doing so in the near future, as well as potential consolidation opportunities that exist within the space to add to the portfolio of projects that we've built to date.
Marvelous stuff. Good to chat to you, Sachin. And like I say, you've got a busy portfolio of stuff going on there. So no doubt we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Pierre Fury, Managing Director of GST. Ticker there is GST, which is quite simple to remember. Pierre, thanks for joining me.
Hi, Justin. Good to hear you.
Yeah, well, you've signed, you know, a letter of intent with quite an impressive company, Siam Motors, and we'll get into the detail of that in a bit. Before we do, as always, Pierre, for people not familiar with GST, could you give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Yes, exciting news for us. GST is a technology investment company, and we invest in companies that have a good, solid base, good history, that operate in high growth technology areas. Our one subsidiary is EMS. They've been in the business 28 years, solid company. They do ICT infrastructure. And then we're looking around as part of our strategy to expand that into other areas of technology, more innovation, integration, those sort of areas of the business. But exciting times for us.
Yeah, yeah. And before we get into the news there, this is about a data center, of course. Are you looking, you know, specifically to get involved in that area, data centers?
Yes, we, as part of what EMS does on the infrastructure development side, we do build data centers for clients. And now with our London listing, we've been given more responsibility, bigger projects. But as we stated during our listing and our IPO, we are looking at becoming owners of data centers and operating it ourselves, mm-hmm. and selling the storage space plus value-added services. And the overall strategy for data centers, the way I see it is, you know, the global market, we don't want to compete with Microsoft and Google and those boys, but with 5G coming, with the Internet of Things just generating so much more data, data centers are going to evolve into, based on those requirements, you have to be a lot closer to the end user where the actual data is generated, where a lot of edge computing is going to be required, and you'll see smaller, more fit-for-purpose data centers coming about in the next few years. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely positioning ourselves for that, looking at developing countries. Thailand is one where there's the whole Eastern Economic Corridor being developed as a new hub, you know, in the future for us, also Africa and those areas where building data centers close to the end user is our focus.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not far off 5G. I know, I think in this country, I think Vodafone was saying they're launching 5G in July. Of course, there may be delays with the Huawei stuff, but what I'm aware of is that, that there's just the speed and lack of latency and the amount of data that will be generated. I suppose these data centers will become, like you say, more prevalent, won't they?
That's it. So latency is the key. You know, there are massive old data centers, new data centers all over the world being built with renewable energy sources. We focus on areas where the energy is at a low cost and we're closer to the end user, which will address that latency problem.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, let's talk about the news today. So you signed a letter of intent here with Siam Motors. Can you take us through the detail of this, please, Pierre?
Yes, so we're very excited about this. And I think for us, the future does involve partnerships. And this is a good one for us, where this is a big corporation in Thailand, very well respected, good business people. And they own the land where the data center has been demarcated, or the area demarcated for data centers. They're busy with other developments, sort of high-tech hospital, some additional government buildings in that area. So a lot of growth happening. So we're fortunate to have this relationship with the CR Motors Group. They have already indicated that, you know, they're prepared to supply the land and building, and we have to do obviously the inside, the actual data center part of it. We'll be doing a lot of due diligence work. We're busy locating anchor clients, and the next step for us would be to negotiate the full JV. This is just the first step letter of intent, so we'll be updating you in due course.
Yeah. And is this kind of set up the way this kind of, you know, joint venturing, is this kind of set up the way you want to go forward? I mean, is this typical of the strategy going forward?
I would say so, yes. Obviously, the next data center that we build will be able to leverage on this one. As you fill up your data center, you're able to increase your debt financing for that data center, and that those funds can be used. So we definitely see our equity stake increasing going forward, but most of the time, we would look for good local partners. Definitely looking at partners in the communication side, the mobile phone type companies, where the 5G data will be generated. So those kind of partnerships are key to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you mentioned there, I mean, this is in Thailand, and you did mention that you're doing a lot of stuff, you know, in that area. And is that a specific focus geographically for you?
Yes, I think these things come about through business connections and through us looking at the market where the opportunities lie. So with Thailand on our doorstep, to our office in Singapore, and we're quite familiar with that country. So a big growth opportunity.
Yeah.
And strategically close to the marine cables that come from elsewhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, Pierre, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the progress, can you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please?
I think we're nice people, so they should just click and follow us. No, basically...
That'll do it.
Basically, we have a very solid strategy in terms of creating shareholder value, which is acquire companies with good history, good engineering skills, good people working for us, leverage that into areas where there's high growth. So, you know, with a solid base, profitable company, I think that's a key for us too. Being profitable gives us lots of opportunities, and we raise money to really expand and do further acquisitions as opposed to keeping the pot boiling. Mm-hmm. So very exciting future, and I think investing in GST, or at least following us and deciding when to invest, is a good thing to do.
Marvelous stuff, Pierre. Good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for your time.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector specialist Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks. Justin, and you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's sort of a bit of a hectic weekend with the folks coming down and my kids and all that stuff. It's just, you know, just always interesting. Well, it's always interesting having to deal with my parents and my kids at the same time. You know, so. There we are, a couple of generations in the house. But, yeah, all good to go. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to June because apparently we're nearly there. Well, you know, it's not far off and it's going to be a very, very hot June, they're predicting. It's climate change for you, see?
Well, I mean, we haven't had any climate change in the last 2 or 3 weeks since that warm Easter. Mm. And, you know, sort of... June could do with being a good one. We've got hosting the World Cup, aren't we? So... Yeah. So yeah, we could do some warm weather, and of course Royal Ascot. So
yeah.
We need some good weather.
Cool. What are we looking at? Any news out on stocks? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a few. I mean, I'm picking out is one or two things from today, and then one or two things that have been out this in the last week while we've been away. So most important thing is probably Echo Energy this morning, which looks to me like an absolutely fascinating announcement that, you know, if I'd wished for something which Echo could do for me, this is exactly it. Yeah. They're basically restructuring the Argentinian portfolio and they're leaving. I mean, they're in with CGC, which is their partner over there. They're leaving all the CDL concessions, you know, Fraction C, Fraction D and CDL, to concentrate on Tapiaiki, which is I've always called it the jewel in the crown. I think it'll be just that. I think that when you looked at the competent persons report, Tapiaiki was where all the value was. And to be honest, because the situation was that you couldn't get into Tapiaiki until you'd done a huge amount of 3D seismic, which they're doing at the moment. They've completed the first cube and they're analysing that and they're doing the second one. So actually they had to be doing something to be, otherwise they'd have spent a year doing nothing and, you know, no one would have said, you know, what's the point of having them? So, it, you know, it wasn't worthless. It was just that now they've got a chance to change the to restructure the deal with CGC. So Echo is now in for 19% of what is potentially a huge play in Tapiaiki. They pay their own way rather than be carried, which is actually good because of the smaller percentage. It saves an immediate $2 million freed up from their immediate costs on the CDL assets and, of course, the $11 million worth of potential seismic, which they would have had to done down there as well. So it's all concentrating on Tapiaiki. They are, as I said, completing the 3D seismic at the moment, and it also means that it's been brought forward. So I guess from what they say that they're looking to drill the first well at Tapiaiki in the fourth quarter of this year rather than the first or second quarter of next year. Restructures their financing as well, so that's very helpful. And they've just confirmed Martin Hull as the CEO. I interviewed him the other day. He was technically the managing director then. So, you know, I'm really, really delighted by this news from Echo, and I think shareholders should be too. It's looking very positive indeed.
Well, they'll be slightly relieved, I suppose, won't they? Because it's been a bit of a... It hasn't delivered recently, is it, the share price? So it's been grinding a bit lower. So, I mean...
Well, the reason it's been grinding a bit lower, Justin, is because there was nothing going on really this year. They knew that they would be spending a bit more money and doing stuff in the CDL assets with Fraction C and Fraction D. But they came in with a bit of oil and gas, but nothing special. And this year was always going to be, you know, they'll wait and see what, you know, the excitement of Tapiaiki and everything else. But now they're getting money back from the ones that they spent on. They won't be spending money on that. And then, you know, we're nearly in June, and you know, so in the second half they'll be drilling, and they'll be giving some results from the, both cubes of 3D seismic. So,
yeah,
you know, it actually, you know, with one mighty step, they've done well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Nice bounce today. What are they up here? Up about 17% or 18% close to right now. So, nice stuff. Cool. What's next,
Mark? I would have thought it'd be, yeah, very handy and well worth a bit more, probably. Mm-hmm. We've had announcements today from Rose and Pantheon and Jersey Oil and Gas. Rose have said that the guy who was going to invest the money and come on the board has effectively failed to come up with the money. And fortunately, they had another suitor at the same time who's wanting to put more money in at a slightly higher price, which is great news. This is a guy from Origin Creek Energy, who they know very well in the States. So, you know, from a, what looked like it might have been a problem, has actually turned out to be a sort of bonus. He's put his 300 grand in, slightly higher than the previous number, 1.2p. The CEO is also joining as the new executive chairman to work with Matt Idiom there. So, you know, things are looking up for Rose. Announcement also from Pantheon, where they're beginning to slip out some of the data from the Alcade well. Not much in the announcement, but the shareholders will be pleased to know that that the reservoir that they drilled in the Brookian zone at Alcade Well is what they call greatly superior to pre-drill estimates. They obviously think they've got something here. It was obviously, if you remember, we had sort of disappointment. We had an initial discovery and then a disappointment in the other zones, and it went back to square one again. The result from the initial Brookian is okay. They say it's obviously greatly superior, and they're putting in all the hard work on the local facilities and everything else. So, slightly better news from Pantheon there.
It's like that phenomenal rise hasn't happened, isn't it? It's like in 2015 they were like at this level right now, which or 18 pence. And they went up to sort of 180, 10 bagger there, double topped at 180.
Yeah, and then recently when they thought they'd had a big discovery on the Alcade, I think that ran all the way up and then turned out to be not as good as expected as well. So it keeps going back to 18p every time I look at it.
Yeah.
It's 18p.
That's the magnet number. Cool. What's next, Malky?
Jersey Oil and Gas. You know, they've had a difficult quarter.
Yeah.
If you remember, they... all the good news from last year was when they'd found the discovery at Verbier, and then they had the appraisal well at Verbier with Equinor, and it was unsuccessful, which is difficult when you've got an appraisal well which looks like you're trying to find a certain zone, which obviously, you know, the shares crashed, and but. You know, I think this is the beginning of the sort of rebuild for Jersey Oil and Gas. They've you know, they've had huge support from Equinor, who clearly believe, like them, that there's something here, and that they're at the bottom end of the range. There was 25 to 130, but they genuinely believe that 25 million barrels is not only commercial but potentially a part of a bigger development. And of course, they've got plenty of cash. They've got 19.8 million quid at the end of the year. They're going to spend between 4 and 5 million from their the Verbier appraisal. But so they'll have a decent amount of money. They've got this huge 3D seismic program they did over the whole process, which should lead to more analysis and therefore looking at things like the Cortina prospect and so on. And of course, there's the 31st round from the UK government, which will be exciting because I suspect this is going to be one of the big hubs. So, you know, it's been a difficult few months for Jersey Oil and Gas. It's not all over. You know, there's no doubt that there's a risk or two in there, but that's what the exploration game is all about. But they're in a strong position. They've got a good management team. They've got plenty of cash. And they've got Equinor behind them, and I think it's worth another look at the moment.
Yeah, cool. Marvellous. Anything else, Marky?
Yeah, 2 or 3 that came out last week. Rarebold, in fact, Rarebold is an announcement from this morning.
Yep.
They've announced from their California drilling in Burnett 2B and 2A. They've now completed the wells. Multiple zones, as we expected, have been perforated and swabbed, and they've received commercial flow rates at both wells, which are going to be analysed. Infuriatingly, they keep putting out things, and then so they'll tell you the flow rates later. So in about 2 weeks' time, we'll get flow rate from these wells, and there's potential for more zones as well. So Rarebold is a good stock. It's a good team of people running it. And California, these wells pay back very quickly, so this is very good news for Rarebold.
Yeah, we had Sachin on the podcast today, and of course, yeah, like I said, they're you know, a quality team, and they've had some good success, and yeah, they know what they're doing. They're sharp guys.
Yeah, good
cool.
team.
What's next?
Elsewhere, well, we've got 2 or 3, which I ought to mention. Amerisur had an update last week. Now, they keep delivering good news, but the market doesn't. We talked about this before, where the market just hasn't given it the benefit of the doubt. Production is now 6,500 barrels a day, which is above their guidance at the moment. They're drilling in a number of different areas. They're drilling an infill well at Platanillo 26. They've completed 2 workovers at Platanillo 2 and 7, where they've merged the U and T sands. And they're drilling a sidetrack in Platanillo 27. They've also spudded the next CPO-5 well in the north of the country, which is called Sol 1. And they've announced the first batch of third-party crude, which goes through the OBA pipeline, which has got capacity in it, so they can charge other people. If you remember, it saves them a huge amount of money going through the pipeline rather than trucking it for miles, and so that they can get a very decent tariff from that. So, you know, all the boxes at Amerisur are being ticked except the share price.
Well, do you know what? It's broken that downtrend. That's the thing. It went to 10 pence and it punched right back above the 200-day moving average to 20 pence. It's come back a little bit because when you get something rise that fast, you get sellers that have been there for a long time, you know, stale bulls. So it's consolidated. But I think we saw the bottom there, 10 pence, and it's now at 12. But I think hopefully it'll start to build a bit here, maybe, you know?
I would have thought so. I mean, the value of the business, you know, you only have to look at it. I mean, you know, we're talking about $72 oil or whatever it is, and 6,500 barrels a day, mm-hmm. plus more than that, which they're getting a tariff from. Plus, you know, I don't know. It seems funny to me, but people know better, because I made a... you know, we all make mistakes. And talking about mistakes...
Mm-hmm.
SDX Energy.
Yeah, it's very surprising.
Now, last week that came out. I mean, this is not a game over story by any matter of means. SDX produced results last week where the Q1 production was up 22%. It was down slightly. I mean, could have been slightly better if it hadn't been for Northwest Ghemsa, which is seeing a slightly increased water cut in its oil. That's in Egypt. And the fact that the two announcements that people didn't want to hear. One was that in South Tasuk in Egypt, which was already running late and was, you know, hopefully was going to be up in the first quarter, then in June. Now it looks like it won't come on stream to the end of this year. So the market, who had already been concerned about this, proved to be right that was delayed. And then they cut back their guidance for sales of gas in Morocco. Because the new clients are signing up more slowly, and one of their existing clients is cutting back one of its key lines of work, which led to the resignation of Paul Welch, the CEO.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it's probably because people were expecting more, and they had sort of South to suit and the Morocco numbers, but I think it's a bit harsh on Paul Welch, but you know, the market, you know, when I saw all the comments on Friday, I could see why people, you know, they hadn't hit their goals. And but this is not like having a single well company having a dry hull. The Moroccan market is still very positive. They're going to be drilling something like, I don't know, 15 wells or something in the next year, and you know, they'll be coming up with more and more good numbers.
I mean, do you know what? It seems like he's you know, steered the sort of the company to a decent position. You're going to have some disappointments. I do think it's a bit harsh on Paul. I think he's done very well, you know, and you're always going to miss some guidance here and there.
The last year has been a disappointment, but you know, if you look what the company has come from, it's very positive indeed. So, yeah, you know, I agree with that one.
Yeah. Anything else?
And just finally, I wanted to, we had three companies who raised money at the end of last week. Mm-hmm. One was Falcon Oil and Gas, which is in Australia. They raised $10 million at 14p. You've got to give them the benefit of the doubt on that one, because they haven't raised any money for 6 years. And they've got a very, very expensive 2 years coming up, most of which they're carried for. And this is certainly not an cost overrun or anything, but they've decided to take advantage of the fact that they had some new investors wanting to come on board. So I like Falcon a lot. And then we had a raise for Block Energy, raised $12 million, which was amazing given what they've come a long way in the last few months. Yeah. And they're a very exciting company as well. I'm looking forward to catching up with Paul Hayward soon. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that Egdon Resources, at the lower end of the range, raised 2.2 million quid at 5p a share, just to keep the lights on and the drilling going at their UK onshore stuff, which is also interesting, but taking a bit more time than people thought.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Cool. That's good stuff. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... 11 companies here, Mark. Yeah, it's good going.
We whizzed through them, haven't we, mate? Well done.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Well, that's it's bank holiday again next week, isn't it?
Oh my God, it is, isn't it? Just the 20th, so it must be. Yeah.
How many are we having this year? Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, we'll catch up the week later, Malky, all right?
Okay, look forward to it, Justin. Take care now.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Thomas Cook Group, down, well, at the moment, 15%, but this, it was down like 30% earlier on, and this is off the back of a 40% drop on Friday. And to be honest with you, it doesn't look very good for Thomas Cook. Their market cap, their valuation is about 150 million, 160 million, remember that, or a bit more. They've got debt about 1.3 billion, and they're making a loss, so it's not good. At 4, Rehobold Resources, RBD, of course. I chatted to Sachin on the podcast. At 3, Way Education. Down 4.8%, but they've risen strongly the last 2 weeks. And I covered them on a video on the weekend. I do hold a bit of stock in them. I quite like them. Online education, growing market. And they streamline the business. And, you know, they're cash generative. And they've got about $5 million in cash. At 2, Nuformix. I also covered those on the podcast. On the video on the weekend. On YouTube, just search out for YouTube for me, and you'll find me there. But they're coming into a data-rich period. And that data is very significant. Check out the video there. I talked to her. And also Dan, if you go to the page, Nuformix on Vox Markets, go to their page, NFX, you'll see an interview with Dan there. And you'll see a podcast interview with him there that I've done. Number one most followed companies, Emotion Group. IMMO, Martin came on the podcast. CEO Martin Higginson came on the podcast on Friday, I think it was a Thursday or Friday, and they also had news last week, which was quite a Thursday, I think it was, and they also had big news last Friday there. But I also talk about them on the video on the weekend. Just again, search that up, and you'll find that there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Optibiotics Health license agreement for LPLDL. At 4, Jersey Oil and Gas, final results for the year ended 31st December. At 3, Echo Energy, portfolio restructuring and appointment of CEO. At 2, Ascent Resources, purchase of mobile compressor unit. Wow. Rock and roll. And number 1, most liked RNS, comes from Rehobold Resources, Californian operational update. Of course, I chatted to Sachin Oza on the podcast today. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.